Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sport Intern Special Podcast, presented by me, Ashish Sharma. Tune in to our podcast to hear all the latest from the world of the Olympic movement, from presidents of Olympic federations to the athletes themselves. In this edition of the podcast, Sport Intern caught up with Günter Junger. He's the Director of Intelligence and Investigations at the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. Prior to that, Günter was the head of the cybercrime section in Bavaria in Germany. Well, I began our conversation by asking Günter to tell me more about a recent memorandum of understanding signed between WADA and Interpol, the Intergovernmental Police Organization.
Way now where we are, and it could have made good progress. So in 2009, so more than 10 years ago, I was at Interpol and I was the head of drugs at Interpol, and WADA approached Interpol at that time, and it was Olivier Nigli actually with David Hauman, and they said, listen guys, we need more law enforcement involved in doping cases. Because as a sport organization, it's quite difficult to really get to the ground of an allegation. So therefore, whether we Interpol at that time is interested to help us help WADA to establish a better relationship with law enforcement. And at that time, I took over. I said, yeah, why not? We can, the infrastructure probably from criminals will be the same. And this is where WADA and Interpol signed a memorandum of understanding. And since then, Interpol was always a part of WADA. And in 2016, I joined then WADA from my police organization and then WADA because of the Russian scandal. So I was the investigator of the independent commission. And in this respect, it was always clear for me as a sport organization, we need strong partners. And the only partners who have the power to get arrest warrants or search warrants is only law enforcement. So therefore, it was always clear for me, we need to reach out more to our partners. And we continued the work that I started more or less in 2009. And in the first 3-4 years, we had already investigations with more than 12 law enforcement agencies, and it always went well. And now we are almost there where law enforcement approaches us and says, okay, you're a reliable partner. We have a case. Can you help us? And I think that's the only way to go.
It's interesting because I think most of us, when we think about Interpol, is, as you just alluded there, you think of it in terms of criminals, you know, sort of working across internationally over different police forces. But you say that there are some similarities. How do you view that relationship? Because I suppose when we talk about drug cheating in sport, it's very different to drug smuggling as smugglers, you know, who are involved in trafficking drugs.
So when we investigate a cheater, you usually have an athlete in mind who takes drugs, but most of the time he's surrounded by support personnel, including doctors, coaches, and these guys then perhaps are involved in this conspiracy. Not always, but there are cases where the athlete gets then the prohibited substances by their entourage or by the support persons. And what we see, and this is perhaps a parallel world that has more and more raised the interest of organized crime group, because what we see, and we as well are partnering with Europol. We signed a memorandum of understanding with them in 2021. And we see more and more organized crime group go into more PED trafficking, manufacturing, because an organized crime group is driven by three elements. The first one is high profit, which you can achieve. The second one is low detection. Nobody really takes care. In most of the police services, doping is not on the highest priority. And the third one is low sanction. So if you have 3 kilograms of cocaine or 3 kilograms of PED, that's a big difference. So it was natural that the organized crime group detect this market. And we see more and more seizures going up with our partners. And this is the third pillar that I would like to establish, that we work closer with law enforcement, help them as well, perhaps to detect illicit laboratories or with their seizures. And in return, we get perhaps information about potential athletes or coaches or whoever is involved in the delivery or supply of PEDs to athletes.
I'm curious to know about the profit side of it, because I can certainly understand the value of 3 kilos of cocaine, for example, what that might mean on the street. But when you're talking about substances which are really performance-enhancing drugs, for example, for an athlete, where are the profit margins we're talking about? Because you're not going to have the same number of customers, clients, if you like, as you would if you're dealing with social drugs.
It starts more or less with the powder or with the original substance that is produced. Mainly India and China, these are the main contributor in the substances, and then it's getting broken down by illicit laboratories, and then they produce pills. And I would even say that the profit for PEDs is higher than for classical drugs, because you have usually clients that have quite a lot of money. While when you go on the street with drugs, with heroin or cocaine, usually you have small portions and they are not very pure, while the athletes that, or even the sport persons who are in the gyms, etc., they want good product as well. So therefore, the profit, I mean, I have to compare because it's not so easy. But in at the end, I think you make even more profit when you sell PEDs.
When you come into this field, and obviously you now have that balance, that wonderful balance of experience of looking at it from a sporting point of view, do you view the athletes as innocent victims, if you like? Because there are cases where we are reading or we're finding examples where perhaps coaches are providing substances, maybe athletes aren't fully aware or certainly not of the implications in the long term. Well, you know, from a, I suppose, a policing point of view, are they seen as being innocent or are they all sort of involved and implicated to the same degree?
I would not say innocent. However, I mean, every athlete spends, I don't know how many hours per day to fulfill the dream, perhaps to be at the Olympics or be in a world championship. And they work very hard. And then I understand when you have the wrong people around you, who say, okay, we can push it a little bit and you are safe, that without actually knowing what they're doing, that they will trust their entourage or the doctor or the coach and say, everything will be fine, you're protected, nothing can happen. And this is where we need to be more present of saying, no, it's not okay. And actually, you're not protected, because as soon as you get caught, it's done and your whole world will break down. So don't go this path. What is interesting, and I come from background or drugs and organized crime, and that was something very specific in sport, is our whistleblowers or our informants that come forward. Usually in police, when someone comes forward, he either wants a reduction of the sentence or money. In sport, there's a third category, which is really, we want a clean sport. So there are so many people out there who really believe in the integrity of sport and what they're doing. And these are wonderful people that we work with. And this is why sometimes the athletes, I see this victim, but as well, there are very few that they don't know what they're doing, I think.
You mentioned there, of course, 2016 and the big breakthrough with what happened in Sochi with the Winter Olympics and the drug sort of scandal that fell out of that. How key a moment do you feel that was, certainly for WADA, in terms of breaking that down. And, you know, we're talking about state, you know, statewide doping here with a federation as big as Russia, for example. But what, how, you know, when you look back on that, how key a moment was that? And what have been the consequences of that moving ahead to where we are today?
I think that before 2015, no one even believed that this is possible. So if you had raised the topic probably before 2015, they would say, no, that's not possible. How can that be? With Russia, I think there was a big eye-opener for many organizations, including WADA. And WADA immediately 2015 with the new codes, they could start investigation. Before that, it was not really present. And now we are 17 people. So for a small organization with WADA having almost 10% of staff now for I&I shows how tremendous importance this game changer was. And for me, I probably am the only one who loves crisis, because crisis usually has as well a good component, which means changes. And I think when you look back in the last 5 years, how the overall infrastructure on I&I capabilities how many people are now investing in this new tool, that's wonderful. So even if it was a really bad experience for the sport world, it has a good component, because now more and more we see in this area. And just to give you an example of my team, we are 17 people and we hired gradually in the last 6 years. But my team was instrumental for more than 400 athletes or officials being charged from our team. And that would have been not happened if we were not there.
And I suppose as we move ahead with, you mentioned there's certain aspects of technology, how much on top do you and your team have to be with what is being done out there to try and mask, you know, the whole process? And is it getting more difficult, or are you, as you establish yourselves and as you grow as a team, are you finding the patterns and you're finding it easy to identify? I mean, I suppose I'm alluding to the fact that could we see something as big as Russia coming out in the future, which just hits us from nowhere? Or now are we pretty much across knowing where things are happening and how you can kind of control it before it gets too big?
I think there will always be a little bit of a gap between what criminals or dopers or cheaters will do, and we will always adjust. However, and I think that's a big difference with my colleague from science, when they develop new methods, prohibited methods or new substances, they always have to adjust. What we from the I&I, we don't have that, because we are relying on people that come forward. And this is where I think something with Russia, and I highlight that again, Russia was not taken down by WADA or was taken down by the Western countries. Russia was taken down by honest athletes and officials in Russia. They came forward and they just didn't have anyone to talk to, or had not the power to. And I think that has changed. So now, and I hope and I believe that if such big thing would established again, there would be someone to talk and would come forward, hopefully, and then we can address it, and we can try to get to the bottom of this case. Nevertheless, we need to see our restrictions. We are not a police organization. We're international organization, but you know, we have no jurisdiction in the respective countries. We are like a private person. So this is where we then need law enforcement, which was in Russia quite difficult, because we saw that they were involved as well. So that's then for us a big challenge. So I'm hoping that we will not have something similar, because it caused a lot of headache. Nevertheless, we found a way, and the way was going through the athletes, because the athletes, many athletes, believe in clean sport, and I think that would be our chance.
Well, those there were the thoughts of Günter Junger, the World Anti-Doping Agency's Director of Intelligence and Investigations. Don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest news from the Olympic movement by subscribing to the Sport Inter newsletter produced every day from Monday to Friday. But until the next time, stay safe.